Well, hi there. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Oh, well, that ended quickly. I think we have Uncle Mike's Story Corner tonight. Also, the craziness that is going on in Washington regarding two things. The EPA's decision toward regulating greenhouse gases, including that climate-changing pollution threatens the public health and environment. That's driving the Republicans crazy. And the Democrats. I mean, let's face it, both parties are a train wreck. But and the other thing, of course, is the continuing fight about so-called health insurance reform. If you were counting on anything really happening, give it up. You know, then you won't be disappointed. I swear to God, on either issue, just stop. Just don't worry about it. All right. You and I will be dead. Well, of course, we've got our kids and grandkids to think about, right? But out of hell with it. Let them think about it. I'm becoming more and more in a mental frame of just being bemused or amused or something, because it's finally occurred to me that there's really not a lot you and I can do about it. As a matter of fact, Uncle Mike's Story Corner tonight is a piece by Chris Hedges that I think you're going to find interesting. Well, maybe you won't. This is December 7th, and I have to mention it, 68 years ago today. And my mother told me it was on a Sunday. I believe it was on a Sunday. The attack on Pearl Harbor, or as it was called by the Japanese Imperial General Headquarters, Hawaii Operation Z. It was, as you know, if you've read history, or you may have been alive. I wasn't, but maybe you were. An unannounced military strike conducted by the Japanese Navy against the U.S. Naval Base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. And you know what happened subsequent to that attack. It was an earth-shaking event, to say the least, in its ultimate implications. But I'll tell you what, I was watching something on the History Channel, I think it was yesterday, at some point yesterday, about what really happened in the lead-up to the Treaty of Versailles after World War I, and how the Germans were utterly humiliated. A, B, how the globe was divided up by Woodrow Wilson and Clemenceau and whoever the British guy was, I forget already. But and the Japanese refused to sign the agreement. I think the Chinese refused to sign the agreement. Anyway, it was very interesting. It's a little piece of history that I think most of us who have any working knowledge of history understand that World War One and World War Two were, it was the same war with about a 20-year hiatus between the two, but it was the same war, but the humiliation and what was done to the Germans after World War One. And maybe they deserved it. I don't know. I'm just saying what was done to the Germans resulted in the rise of the Third Reich, and so on and so on and so on. But today is December 7th, and it is the 68th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. Well, seems like yesterday, doesn't it, for you people who are still... My mother said that was the defining day of her generation. They had other things to deal with, but the defining day was that attack. The EPA took a major step today and toward regulating greenhouse gases. And, of course, the Republicans are just, you know, it's the end of the world as we know it as a result of this. This announcement came just as the Obama administration is trying to boost its arguments for climate change mechanisms to try to bring this to, if not a halt, at least some kind of a turnaround at this international climate conference in Copenhagen. And that opened today, too, the international climate conference. Oh. Anyway, the EPA said that the scientific evidence surrounding climate change clearly shows that greenhouse gases, quote, threatens the public health and welfare of the American people, end quote. And that the pollutants, mainly carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels, should be regulated under the Clean Air Act. Now, the reason, of course, this caught my attention is because how during the years of the Bush administration, the whole idea of trying to regulate the kind of toxic garbage that was dumped into the environment, the water, the soil, the air, was laughed at. You know, just laughed at. The Bush crime family and their various cabinet ministers who were supposed to guard the public health and welfare. You know, I have to laugh even saying it. They just said to hell with it. They said to hell with it. You know, it doesn't make any difference. To hell with it. Anyway, they named, I think there were four gases that, I don't know why I'm laughing. It's the laughter that comes trickling out of your mouth as you walk by a graveyard. You know what I'm saying? Four different toxic byproducts of capitalism. The EPA has decided they're going to try to regulate how this is done, how it's released in the atmosphere and other places. That's according to EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson. She had a news conference. John Kerry, the Democratic senator from Massachusetts, said, quote, this is a clear message to Copenhagen of the Obama administration's commitments to address global climate change. End quote. Is it? Okay. Business groups, that means Republicans and neo-Nazis and right-wingers and Christers and the rapture-ready crowd, people who don't care about life on this planet, they have strongly argued against tackling global warming through the Clean Air Act, saying it is less flexible and more costly than the cap-and-trade bill being considered before Congress. And the cap-and-trade bill, I don't care what Krugman said today in the New York Times, cap-and-trade bill is a joke. It's a joke. It just means, okay, you can still pollute, but you're going to have to buy permits. But that's all right. Go ahead. Now it's government sanctioned. You see, now it's okay. Oh, Lord. Well, anyway, this announcement by the EPA today, it should be fun because the first thing is, and again, this is very dark humor tonight, and I'm at that point. Because what will happen now, the first thing that's going to happen now is there will be a challenge, a court challenge, to this new decision by Lisa Jackson. There will be a court challenge saying that the EPA does not have the right to do this. It has to be congressionally mandated. This is what the challenge is going to be. I'm giving to you right now before somebody gets all flippy and wordy and starts giving legalese. And it'll probably be Sensenbrenner and the rest of these right-wing bastards and probably a couple of Democrats who are lost at sea, but they will go together or they'll get some trade industry group. You know, the members of Congress will keep their fingerprints off of everything, but they'll get some trade industry group or some poor, I don't know, massively polluting coal factory somewhere, and they will file a lawsuit in federal court, and the court will either throw it out or, depending on where they file it, will uphold it, and then it'll go to the appeals court. And then they'll throw it out or uphold it, and then it'll go to the Supreme Court. So look for this to work its way through the courts over a period of about 2 years, at which point we're all going to be choking to death anyway. So anyway, da-da-da-da-da-da! Now, the hijacked emails, we're going to talk about that too, okay? Seriously. But when we come back after this break, I have just a really cool announcement for you. Stick around.
Save your soul when it comes to the belly.
It is 21 past the hour. Okay, this is almost too much to handle in one brief announcement. First of all, beginning tonight, if you're listening in San Francisco Bay Area, you know that we are live on Green 960. That station has been carrying our program, but on a delayed basis for quite some time now. I want to thank John Scott and the whole crew out of Green 960 for deciding to take this program live. So if you're listening in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, and environs, hi. We're live, so give us a call when we get to that point of taking phone calls. The number is 877-996-2556. I've made several trips to San Francisco, courtesy of Green 960, and it's really it's nice to be on that station live. So, again, to the staff and the decision-makers at Green 960, thank you very much. And a big thanks to John Scott, who is the program director there. The other thing is we've decided here at the Molloy Show to do a BOGO. Do you know what a BOGO is? Buy one, get one? If you go to my website, go to MikeMolloy.com, you will see right across the top an ad. Click on it, and it's for subscriptions. Here's how it works. If you buy a subscription, if you're a new subscriber and buy a subscription to the Mike Molloy podcast downloads, commercial free for $59.40 a year, you get another one free. And, you know, I know you're tired of hearing this because I am too, but it does make a hell of a good Christmas gift. So this reduces your costs down to $29.70 or something. So if you go to MikeMolloy.com, and it'll be up there for up until Christmas, I think. How long are we running this, Candy? Limited time only? Is that what I'm supposed to say? All right. Limited time only. Most assuredly will stop before Christmas. So, and people get an instant notification. Well, not instant, but they get notified very quickly that you have bought for them podcast subscription downloads, yada, yada, completely commercial free of the Mike Molloy Show. And it's good for a year, one solid year. So, what this means is, instead of 25 cents a download, it will now cost you 12 and a half cents. Because it's a quarter a download when you figure 59.40 a year, 59.60. So anyway, if you go to MikeMolloy.com, there it is. It looks like an ad. Click on it. It says, what does it say? Hell, I don't even know what it says. I haven't taken a look at it here. Let me see. Okay, well, there it is. Just go to MikeMolloy.com, and across the top, it'll say a limited time holiday offer from the Mike Molloy Show. A green in keeping with the spirit of the season. What does it say here? No standing in line. The perfect holiday gift. Buy one pound. No standing lines are waiting. Hey, I like that. Did George come up with that? That's wonderful. All right. So, do check it out. We would like to have you subscribe for a number of reasons. First of all, we need your subscriptions in order to continue to do the program. That's where we are. Secondly, you can send this to, if you have any right-wing friends left, send it to them. If you have any Blue Dog Democrat friends, send it to them and freak them out. If you have people that you respect, send it to them also. All right, so that's the business, and we will keep pushing that because this is a BOGO of the highest order, buy one and get one. you probably have heard about the emails that were hijacked. Isn't it funny? On the eve, a couple of days before, a week before this big conference, all of a sudden, emails from university climate researchers have been stolen. Computer hackers were probably paid by people intent on undermining the Copenhagen summit. And this is the thing that gets me. So maybe there was somebody or a couple of somebodies involved in global climate change research who says, well, let's keep that little bit of information out. Is that scientifically correct? No. And he's gone now, and he should be gone. It in my opinion, it was a minor event, and yet the crazy people in the U.S. Congress, the crazy people around the planet now are screaming, see, the whole thing's a fraud. And it just shickles the tit out of me. It really does, because if everything collapses now in the global climate change story, because one researcher said a couple of things about, well, I don't know if we want to include that bit of information. It's going to confuse people, which is scientifically corrupt. I'm the first to admit that. But if that one thing, then I suggest that to the Christians, how do you explain Cain slew Abel, and God was so pissed off, he banished Cain and sent him to the land of Nod, which is east of Eden, and there Cain knew his wife? What? Well, doesn't that mean the whole Bible collapses? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Right. From the left, it's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. And you know what? It's a very chilly night here in Georgia. Perfect night for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Is it chilly where you are? Just curdle up. Have a nice, great big sip of hot chocolate and listen to Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight, the title is Liberals Are Useless by Chris Hedges. Liberals are a useless lot. They talk about peace and do nothing to challenge our permanent war economy. They claim to support the working class and then vote for candidates that glibly defend the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. They insist they believe in welfare, the right to organize, universal health care, and a host of other socially progressive causes, and will not risk stepping out of the mainstream to fight for them. The only talent they seem to possess is the ability to write abject, cloying letters to Barack Obama, as if he reads them, asking the president to come back to his true self. This sterile moral posturing, which is not only useless but humiliating, has made America's liberal class an object of public derision. I'm not disappointed in Obama. I don't feel betrayed. I don't wonder when he is going to be Obama. I didn't vote for the man. I vote socialist, which in my case means Ralph Nader, but could have meant Cynthia McKinney. How can an organization with the oxymoronic title Progressives for Obama even exist? Liberal groups like these make political satire obsolete. Obama was and is a brand. He is a product of the Chicago political machine. He has been skillfully packaged as the new face of the corporate state. I don't dislike Obama. I would much rather listen to him than his smug and venal predecessor, though I expected nothing but a continuation of the corporate rape of the country, and that is what he has delivered. Ralph Nader said to me when we met Saturday afternoon, quote, you have a tug of war with one side pulling. The corporate interests pull on the Democratic Party the way they pull on the Republican Party. If you are a least worst voter, you don't want to disturb John Kerry on the war, so you call off the anti-war demonstrations in 2004. You don't want to disturb Obama because McCain is worse. Every 4 years, both parties get worse. There is no pull. That is the dilemma of the nation and the progressives and other similar publications. There is no breaking point. Nader continued. What is the breaking point? The criminal war of aggression in Iraq, the escalation of the war in Afghanistan, 45,000 people dying a year because they can't afford health insurance. The hollowing out of communities and sending the jobs to fascist and communist regimes overseas that know how to put the workers in their place. There is no breaking point. And when there is no breaking point, you do not have a moral compass. End quote. I save my anger for a bankrupt liberal intelligentsia of which, sadly, I guess I'm a member. Liberals are the defeated, self-absorbed mouse man. And Dostoevsky's notes from underground. They embrace cynicism, a cloak for their cowardice and impotence. They, like Dostoevsky's depraved character, have come to believe that the conscious inertia of the underground surpasses all other forms of existence. They too use inaction and empty moral posturing, not to effect change, but to engage in an orgy of self-adulation and self-pity. They too refuse to act or engage with anyone not cowering in the underground. This choice does not satisfy the mouse man, as it does not satisfy our liberal class, but neither has the strength to change. The gravest danger we face as a nation is not from the far right, although it may well inherit power, but from a bankrupt liberal class that has lost the will to fight and the moral courage to stand up for all it espouses. Anyone who says he or she cares about the working class in this country should have walked out on the Democratic Party in 1994 with the passage of NAFTA. And it has only been downhill since. If welfare reform, the 1999 Financial Services Modernization Act, which gutted the 1933 Glass-Steagall Act, designed to prevent the kind of banking crisis we are now undergoing, and the craven decision by the Democratic Congress to continue to fund and expand our interior wars were not enough to make you revolt, how about the refusal to restore habeas corpus? To end torture in our offshore penal colonies? To abolish George W. Bush's secrecy laws or halt the warrantless wiretapping and monitoring of American citizens? The imperial projects in the corporate state have not altered under Obama. The state kills as ruthlessly and indiscriminately in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan as it did under Bush. It steals from the U.S. Treasury as rapaciously to enrich the corporate elite. It, too, bows before the conservative Israel lobby, refuses to enact serious environmental or health care reform, regulate Wall Street and our relationship with private mercenary contractors, or stop handing obscene sums of money, some $1 million a year to the military, $1 trillion a year to the military and arms industry. So at what point do we stop being a doormat? At what point do we fight back? We may lose if we step outside the mainstream, but at least we will salvage our self-esteem and integrity. I learned to dislike liberals when I lived in Roxbury, the inner city in Boston, as a seminary student at Harvard Divinity School. I commuted into Cambridge to hear professors and students talk about empowering people they never met. It was the time of the leftist Sandinista government in Nicaragua. Spending 2 weeks picking coffee in that country and then coming back and talking about it for the rest of the semester was the best way to credentialize yourself as a revolutionary. But few of these so-called revolutionaries found the time to spend 20 minutes on the Green Line to see where human beings in their own city were being warehoused little better than animals. They liked the poor, but they did not like the smell of the poor. It was a lesson I never forgot. I also was at the time a member of the Greater Boston YMCA boxing team. We fought on Saturday nights for $25 in arenas in working class neighborhoods like Charlestown. My closest friends were construction workers and pot washers. They worked hard. They believed in unions. They wanted a better life, which few of them ever got. We used to run 5 miles after our nightly training, passing through the Mission Main and Mission Extension housing projects. And they would joke, "I hope we get mugged." They knew precisely what to do with people who abused them. They may not have been liberal, they may not have finished high school, but they were far more grounded than most of those I studied with across the Charles River. They would have felt awkward and would have been made to feel awkward at the little gatherings of progressives and liberal intellectuals at Harvard, but you could trust and rely on them. I went on to spend two decades as a war correspondent. The qualities inherent in good soldiers or Marines, like the qualities I found among those boxers, are qualities I admire. Self-sacrifice, courage, the ability to make decisions under stress, the capacity to endure physical discomfort, and a fierce loyalty to those around you, even if it puts you in greater danger. If liberals had even a bit of their fortitude, we could have avoided this mess. But they don't. So here we are again. Begging Obama to be Obama. He is Obama. Obama's not the problem. We are. Another chapter in Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Liberals Are Useless by Chris Hedges, who is he writes a regular column for TruthDig.com. He did graduate from Harvard Divinity School for nearly two decades, was a foreign correspondent for the New York Times. And he is the author of many books. The one I'm reading right now is American Fascists, The Christian Right and the War on America. Chris Hedges. Uncle Mike's Story Corner gets more and more cynical. yeah. And we also have, what do we have time here? No, we don't. I've got a new report here from Prairie 2. So we will get to that a little bit later. Anyway, this this climate email hijacking, I mean, I've never seen such an effort to discredit decades of research, decades of scientific evidence, massive amounts of evidence, not just anecdotal but scientific. All of it is now under the gun, an attempt is being made to discredit all of it by crazy people like Inhofe and Sensenbrenner from this country and people from... No! It's not... See? We told you there was no global warming. We told you it was just a liberal trick. We told you. You know, and I've tried to stay away from the story because it's just madness to me. Mad. Just insanity. But here we are. The emails have been hacked, and I think one or two where one researcher said, I don't like this. This little uptick over here. Let's keep this out of the public discussion. Ooh, that's bad stuff. That's not honesty in that particular moment, that particular interest. I don't listen to right-wing talk radio, but I bet the right-wing cheeseheads are just absolutely having orgasms over this little story, right? Huh?
You see, I told you Barack Obama's all wrong. See? It's crazy. They want to take away your SUV. Well, goddamn them, it's not going to happen.
Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
Well, I disagree with that. We're going to have to change that, Kathy. What do the conservatives have to be afraid of? Absolutely nothing except their own demise. They're all going to die. I mean, but conservatives are very brave, right? Anyway, the vice chairman of the international or the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, the vice chairman of that organization, said that the theft of these emails from the University of East Anglia's climate research unit in the UK was not the work of amateur climate skeptics. It was a sophisticated and well-funded attempt to destroy public confidence in the science that is so evident in man-made climate change. The vice chairman said the fact that the emails were first uploaded to a skeptic website from a computer in Russia was an indication that the culprit was paid. he said, quote, it's very common for hackers in Russia to be paid for their services. If you look at that mass of emails, a lot of work was done not only to download the data, but it's a carefully made selection of emails and documents. It's not random at all. This is 13 years of data, and it's not a job for amateurs, end quote. The vice chairman added that publication of the emails had undermined efforts by the IPCC to convince the 192 countries at the summit, which began today, that they needed to act fast on emissions. The vice chairman said, quote, we are spending a lot of useless time discussing this rather than spending time preparing information for the negotiators, end quote. Oh, God. One line of evidence of suppression of evidence out of millions of lines of copy, but there you go. Now, one more thing about this. The senior editor, Michael Wolff, writing at Newser.com, points out a senior editorial figure at the Guardian newspaper in London. This senior editor is a prime mover of an initiative to create one editorial on climate change that a coalition of newspapers around the world publishes today. This senior editor, asked Michael Wolff why no major U.S. newspapers would play. You know, it was an editorial addressing climate change. And the project has 56 newspapers in 45 countries representing 20 different languages publishing an editorial today meant to firm up the moral determination of the nations gathering this week in Copenhagen to work out a climate change treaty. But except for the Miami Herald, no newspaper signed up in the United States. Huh? The editorial itself, according to Michael Wolff at Newser.com, is not that controversial. Yes, it lambastes the U.S., quote, the world finds itself at the mercy of American domestic politics, end quote, which is true. That's a stumbling block to the treaty. And it threatens onrushing doom by saying, quote, climate change will ravish our planet and with it our prosperity and security, end quote. Yeah, that's true. And you could even go so far as to call the editorialist global warming boilerplate, but I defy anyone to produce the science that says is not true, but never mind. As Michael Wolff says, the more interesting question is not about the sentiment, but why U.S. newspapers are so reluctant to join this bandwagon. All they have to do is just publish an editorial today. Why? Well, where's the reluctance? Well, he answers his own question. He says, I think mostly U.S. newspapers have not grabbed this easy opportunity to rally readers and stand up and be counted because they have no fight left in them. American newspapers have no fight left in them. What I hear about, is it the Houston newspaper, Dallas newspaper? Is now, whichever one it was, and if I got it wrong, I apologize. Maybe it was San Antonio, I don't know, a newspaper, big newspaper in Texas, has decided to assign someone from the advertising department, the business department, to work with the editorial side. I worked in publishing long enough to know that one of the ironclad rules you kept editorial and advertising absolutely separate. I had clashes with over-eager sales managers in the course of my newspaper career when I was a managing editor, begging, pleading, demanding that I provide copy that would tie into an ad campaign because it meant dollars to the newspaper. And my answer to that was no. You know, this is not my rule. This is a journalistic rule. You don't do this and retain your credibility. And now the breach has been made. With a major American newspaper. I don't know if it's the first breach, but here's the answer from Michael Wolff. I think U.S. newspapers have not grabbed this easy opportunity to rally readers and stand up and be counted because they have no fight left in them. And if that's the case, then, and I can understand that, newspapers being ground into the dust. Remember, it's the only avocation, occupation, art, whatever you want to call it, that was given constitutional protection. The First Amendment clearly states that a free press is absolutely necessary in order for a republic to survive. Well, okay. They have no fight left in them. A friend of mine sent me this today, and I read that, and in his email he said, read the last line. So, because they have no fight left in them. Well, we still have fight. And we have a BOGO, buy one, get one. Go to MikeMalloy.com, click on that green banner up at the top. Buy yourself a gift or a subscription to podcast downloads and buy one for a friend or enemy. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Show again. Hello, how are you to our listeners in the Bay Area in San Francisco? Courtesy of Green 960, we are now live during the entire program, and we appreciate the opportunity to bring our brand of insanity on a live, ongoing basis to Green 960 in San Francisco. Thanks to John Scott, who is the operations manager, the program director there, and anyone else who got tricked into making this decision, we do appreciate it. All right, it's time for a little missive from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, who writes, Fed Chairman Bernanke testified to Congress not to expect too much from the recovery, and the jobless rate will not be coming down. This is bad news for the million people who had their unemployment benefits extended by the Stimulus Act earlier this year. Their checks will stop coming in the next few weeks, and Congress has yet to do anything. They had also been receiving a 65% subsidy, the unemployed, on their health insurance, on their average family premium of $1,100 a month. But this has already run out while Congress is bogged down on health care reform that won't kick in for years, if ever. The Congressional Budget Office estimates extending these benefits for another year will cost $100 billion. And this doesn't allow for more people becoming unemployed. What Prairie 2 is writing about, of course, is the COBRA Act. FDR refused to just hand out money during the last Republican Great Depression, believing that jobs were the key to rebuilding an economy. But Roosevelt didn't have today's problems. The factories were still here and hadn't been sold off to China. Even if Obama creates jobs, the money will drain off to multinational corporations that will not do anything to rebuild America. Obama's economic advisors have him playing a monetary game of chicken with China that is putting the entire world economy at risk. In the meantime, It's making the people who run Goldman Sachs, where most of the of his advisors come from, it's making them very rich. Meanwhile, we have millions of people on so-called temporary assistance instead of working, and more are joining them every day. The rest of us continue to slide toward the same cliff edge since nothing has been done to fix the underlying problems, and no more than a handful of members of Congress are even thinking about it. And the rest? Well, they don't do much thinking at all. Prairie 2. PrairieNumeral2.com. Check out his website. Now, speaking of Bernanke, he testified before the Senate Banking Committee today. This is one heartless mofo, boy, I'm telling you. As Ryan Grimm over at Huffington put it, Bernanke channels Willie Sutton in his assault on Social Security. I mean, this is unbelievable. Bernanke has overseen the greatest expansion of the Fed's balance sheet in its history, and pouring trillions of dollars into Wall Street firms at roughly zero interest rates. If you have any doubts where we are, truth seekers, come on, wake up, smell the coffee. Huh? But Bernanke's generosity apparently has a limit. And testimony before the Senate Banking Committee today, and you know he's seeking reappointment as the Fed's chairman, Bernanke called for cutbacks in Medicare and Social Security. Even as unemployment continues to rise and the middle class is on the endangered species list. Forget the polar bears, I'm sorry, but the middle class is on the endangered species list. Citing legendary bank robber Willie Sutton, Bernanke said of the retirement and health care funds, Social Security and Medicare, that are the legacy of the New Deal, Bernanke said, quote, "That's where the money is," end quote. Republican Senator Bob Bennett of Utah sympathized with Bernanke, saying that because of entitlement spending, quote, "you're going to be looking at a situation where the Congress will be unable to provide any kind of fiscal discipline because of the mandatory spending. That puts an enormous burden on your plate," end quote. And Bernanke replied, quote, "well, Senator, I was about to address entitlements. I think you can't tackle the problem in the medium term without doing something about getting entitlements under control and reducing the costs, especially of health care," end quote. And then Bernanke reminded Congress that it has the power to repeal both Social Security and Medicare. Bernanke said, quote, "it's only mandatory until Congress says it's not. And we have no option but to address those costs at some point, or else we will have an unsustainable situation," end quote. I see. So the war spending has to continue. The trillions into these rapacious, dirty, filthy, goddamn rats in the financial services industry in this country. Did you read today how much the Goldman Sachs executives are going to get? An average of $1 million apiece in bonuses. I think about 3,000 of them are in line for these bonuses. What has Goldman Sachs produced? Right. However, other than chopping Social Security, and isn't this amazing? This is coming from a guy who wants to be the head of the Fed again. It's not coming from some crazed mouth breather like George Bush or some robot vampire like Dick Cheney. This is coming from the head of the Federal Reserve System. Anyway, as Ryan Grimm continues at Huffington Post, there are several other obvious options that could make the situation sustainable, including a transaction tax on Wall Street speculation or a slight tax hike on the wealthiest Americans. Oh, no. Increasing taxes on the wealthy simply is not an option. And then Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat of Rhode Island, followed Bob Bennett, Republican of Utah, and pointed out, quote, "there's only really two ways you can deflect this deficit, and that's either by cutting expenditures or raising income taxes or other form of taxes," end quote. Reed asked Bernanke, "can you think of any other way?" And Bernanke returned to entitlement money as a way to balance a budget. Bernanke says, quote, "Willie Sutton robbed banks because that's where the money is. The money in this case is in entitlements," end quote. You son of a bitch. There's also a lot of money at the very top of the income ladder. Reid asked Bernanke if Congress would be wise to, you know, tax some of the uber wealthy. And, you know, Bernanke has lots of suggestions when it comes to cutting entitlements, but he was suddenly quiet. Reid asked, would you take taxes off the table? Bernanke said, those decisions are up to Congress. Reid said, quote, well, your predecessor signaled very strongly that the tax cuts in 2000 were appropriate. Bernanke said, I've not done that. I've done my best to leave that authority where it belongs, with the Congress. Now, just moments before that, of course, he told Congress what he thought. Well, cut Social Security and Medicare. Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont, who has placed a hold on Bernanke's nomination, was apoplectic when the Huffington Post told him Bernanke was pushing for cuts in entitlement spending. Sanders fumed, Bernanke wants to cut entitlement spending. Well, that confirms everything I'm saying. The CEOs and the top people on Wall Street make huge bonuses. And what? We're going to cut back on Social Security and Medicare? That's what we're going to do. During the testimony, Bernanke tried very hard to assure the committee that he had nothing against old people. He said, quote, I'm not in any way advocating unfair treatment of the elderly who have worked all their lives and certainly deserve our support and help. But if there are ways to restructure or strengthen these programs that reduce costs, I think that's extraordinarily important to us to try to achieve, end quote. Son of a bitch. You know, all this talk you've been hearing lately, Truth Seekers, that was courtesy of Ryan Grimm, Huffington Post. All the talk you've been hearing lately of the middle class is dying, it is.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. You know, in keeping with what Chris Hedges wrote about how he doesn't like liberals. And liberals are screwing everything up. If you want to do something, it's time to start voting third party. Vote socialist. Vote Green Party. Rich Whitney, who is a Green candidate for the governor of Illinois. You can find out about him at his website, Rich Whitney, W-H-I-T-N-E-Y. He's got a little blurb here. He says he explains why what Obama is doing is illegal where it concerns Afghanistan. Rich Whitney says any presidential order to commit more troops to Afghanistan is illegal under established principles of international law, just as the initial invasion and occupation were illegal. The war against Afghanistan violates international law, including the Charter of the UN, the Geneva Conventions, the Charter of the Nuremberg Tribunal, and international agreements dealing with the suppression and control of terrorism. One of the principles that our nation championed during the Nuremberg war crimes trials was the repudiation of aggressive war as an instrument of foreign policy. International law would have justified aggressive efforts to locate and apprehend Osama bin Laden and other terrorists following the 9/11 attacks, but no international law or principle of self-defense justified invading an entire sovereign nation, overthrowing its government, and continuing to occupy while attempting to control both the form and direction of its future government. I digress. We've talked about this on this program. But I just found it interesting that Rich Whitney, candidate for governor, Green candidate for Illinois governor, says the same. He goes on, such orders are also illegal under our Constitution. The authorization to use military force passed by Congress on September 14th, 2001, gave the president, this is a redoing of the War Powers Act, I think. Anyway, gave the president powers, quote, to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or persons he determines planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks, end quote. Or, quote, harbored such organizations or persons in order to prevent any future acts of international terrorism, end quote. And as Rich Whitney points out, this amounts to a permanent delegation of congressional authority to the president, with neither standards to rein in his actions nor clear means of regaining control in Congress. And as such, it was and is an unconstitutional abdication of Congress's exclusive power to declare war, as we have mentioned often on this program. But then Rich goes on and says another principle established in Nuremberg is the principle that government officials have an overriding duty to disobey illegal orders. The Charter of the Nuremberg Tribunal states that government officials have a responsibility not to commit or further, quote, an act which constitutes a crime under international law, end quote. And then he adds, if elected governor of Illinois, I would honor my commitment to the Constitution and established international law and assert the governor's right to veto any mobilization of the Illinois National Guard for service in Iraq or Afghanistan. Rich Whitney, Green candidate for Illinois governor. How much longer are you going to vote Democratic? Huh? Now it depends on the candidate to me. If Cynthia McKinney has run often, she used to be my member of Congress as a Democrat, but of course she was a presidential contender last year, and certainly not on the Democratic ticket. Well, I know it's way too late, but maybe not. My decision has been. I'm not voting for any more Democrats. I just won't. If somebody declares himself to be a liberal or a progressive, and they're for this and they're for that, and they're going to run as a Democrat, quick advice from Malloy, and you know what? Unasked for advice is worth nothing, not even goat snot. But I'll go ahead and offer it. Get out of the Democratic Party. Get run. Turn around. Go the other way. Declare yourself something else. Be a socialist. Be a green. Be a, be a barber pole. But get out of the Democratic Party. Get out quickly. Because if you have any kind of moral imperative or sense of ethical conduct, or you are really interested in this country regaining equilibrium that we may actually have never had, then get out of the Democratic Party. Get out. Become a democratic socialist. Unless you're just, kind of dicking around. If that's the case, then stay as a Democrat. Oh, I can say that, Kathy. It's okay. Kathy in Green Bay writes, someone said today that Bernanke trashed the program that Democrats are most known for, Social Security. And he did it while he was essentially interviewing with them for a job. Would anyone hire someone that damn stupid? Kathy in Green Bay. Quick answer, Kathy. Yes.
Oh,
more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Talking about Afghanistan and Pakistan, I'm telling you, we are, not you and me, we don't have anything to say about it, but a huge, massive error is being committed. You know this as well as I do. And especially you folks who listen to this program who are old enough to remember the horror of Vietnam. And I don't mean the, you know, the reshaped mythology of Vietnam. I'm talking about the horror of Vietnam, 3 million Indochinese dead, 60,000 Americans dead, 250,000 Americans wounded, 500,000 Americans with permanent cases of PTSD, the whole thing, for absolutely nothing. We had no business being there. Here we are again. It's unbelievable. One of the things we talked about in this program is the presence of Blackwater and the presence of the CIA inside Pakistan. And inside Iran, for that matter, but inside Pakistan, committing these acts of terror. You know, every time I hear of another bomb going off, another so-called suicide bomb in Peshawar or any city in Pakistan, I immediately think of Blackwater and the CIA. There's to me, there's no question. There's just no question. In an article that was in the French news agency, it talks about this guy, Umar Hayat, among scores of volunteers who worked for days to find survivors after Pakistan's worst bomb blast in 2 years. That was back on October 28th. And the article says, clawing at debris after a massive bomb pulverized a busy market in Pakistan's northwest capital, Peshawar, this man, Umar Hayat, could find no trace of his eldest son, 11-year-old Mohsin. Now, if you remember that explosion, well, it was over 100 people killed, right? And so many of them were women and children. Hayat told the French news agency, quote, "One after another, we found dead bodies. Soon after burying my brother, I came back to the bomb site. I found my son's body at midnight. The next day in the afternoon, we found my nephew's body." He goes on, "My wife is still in shock. I don't know what to do. She spends the whole time crying and saying, 'Bring back my Mohsin.'" But rather than feel that the Taliban fighters should be blamed for that attack that killed, like I said, probably 125 people, Umar Hayat holds the United States responsible. And then he said something that to me is just heartbreaking. He said, quote, "I appeal to America, please leave us be. Please stop this game, this war on terror. Osama bin Laden is just a smokescreen to attack Muslims. Please stop it. How many more lives will you take in revenge for World Trade Center? Do you want to destroy the whole of Pakistan?" Now, officials, of course, blame these bomb blasts in Pakistan. Do you know how many people have died? 2,600 people in 2.5 years in Pakistan. You know this is a Blackwater. You know it is. You know this is CIA operations. You know it is. You know it is. Parents have lost children. Children have been orphaned. Rashid Javed, who lost his father and two cousins on October 28th, said, "What did my father do? Why did somebody do this to us? Half my cousin's body was missing. We received the upper half. I think America, Israel, and India are involved. The Taliban can't do this. They used to target only police and army men," end quote. And as the French news agency says, such views are widely held in the conservative Muslim city of Peshawar, a cultural capital for Pashtuns, the ethnic group that provides a bulk of Taliban support in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Would the Taliban be blowing up its own people? If you were invaded by a foreign force, would you be blowing up other Americans who only wanted the foreign force to leave? Well, you would if you were Republican, but if you were a normal person, no, I don't think so. Now, the Lahore, Pakistan High Court Chief Justice has served notice on the Interior Secretary in Pakistan for not replying to petition against the activities of Blackwater in the federal capital. The Chief Justice warned that if the Secretary of the Interior did not submit to a reply by December 14th, he, the Secretary, would be prosecuted under the contempt of court law. What's going on there? The Chief Justice wants an explanation about these bombings. The Chief Justice called a detailed report from the Foreign Ministry on a plea to order the search of U.S. Embassy of the U.S. Embassy to recover illegal weapons. He called for a search. There were several news stories cited, according to which American and Dutch nationals were found patrolling the federal capital streets with sophisticated weapons. An attorney handling this case for the Chief Justice said the diplomats and Marines of both the countries had also beat up people. He said no action was taken against them for violating the laws of Pakistan. And he said an American magazine, The Nation, had disclosed the presence of Blackwater in Pakistan and its hideouts in Karachi, Peshawar, and Islamabad. Now, what they want to do is search the U.S. Embassy for illegal weapons. The Chief Justice said the day Blackwater had stepped into Pakistan, terror acts and suicide attacks had been scaled up. The counsel also alleged that in the U.S. Embassy, illegal arms and ammunition were being stored, which were being used for, quote, sabotage acts in the country, end quote. You know what's going on. Come on, Truth Seeker. Come on. You know what's going on. And so do I. You know what's going on. Son of a bitch. Ah. And then according to the LA Times, an estimated $10 million a day, $10 million a day is smuggled out of Afghanistan. Most of it through Kabul's International Airport. That $10 million figure comes from a two-week undercover study conducted by the U.S. that estimated $190 million left through this airport undetected during that period. Much of the cash is on its way to Dubai, the United Arab Emirates. Oh, God. The top financial advisor to President Hamid Karzai, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, says, quote, corruption is a stronger threat than terrorism for Afghanistan. It is a cancer. It is a disease. It has destroyed the reputation of Afghanistan. Really? But your boss, Hamid Karzai, is not only a goddamn liar, he is a goddamn thief. And you're going to talk about corruption? Of course you are. Of course you are. You know what's going to happen in Afghanistan, don't you? Do you have a son or daughter who's in the military? Do you? I feel sad for you if you do. If you have a family member. I wish there was some way that the truth could get through to every single person who's in the military where it concerns Iraq and Afghanistan. I wish there was a way to get past the brainwashing, past the lies and the deceit, past the mission that has been designated by corporate America and its new chief spokesman, Barack Obama. Well, I had a good friend one time that said, wish in one hand and pee in the other and see which one fills up the quicker. So, yeah. Ron in PA says, Mike, what you read from Chris Hedges was not cynical. Hedges was just telling the truth. Isn't it odd how if you offer up any critique of long-held beliefs, like party dictum or worldview, immediately you're considered too negative? How do we get so far away from the courage of our convictions that we can't accept the least bit of questioning of the validity of the BS we identify with? When it comes to the phony baloney posturing of the liberal, we like the poor, but we can't stand how they smell. That's real compassion for you. Elitist window dressing for the bleeding heart in your family. One of my professors wrote a book on the so-called L word, the liberal word. That was back in 1991. I'm afraid to say, despite his sincere effort to reclaim the term from the media bullies, our tormentors won the day. And they make us dance at will like drunks in a Western movie, where they pull out their six-shooters and make us kick up the dust for a little whiskey. Pathetic. I swear we're pathetic cowards.
Monkey Right. It's Mike Malone.
It's 10 before the hour. And then I get this. This is actually dated December 8th, tomorrow. It's from Al Jazeera. Two more attacks in Pakistan have left at least 46 people dead, more than 100 injured. In the eastern city of Lahore, two bomb explosions 30 seconds apart at a busy market ignited a massive fire Monday night that killed 36 people. The blast came a few hours, the blasts, plural, came a few hours after explosion outside a courthouse in northwestern city of Peshawar, killing 10 people, injuring dozens. Al Jazeera's correspondent reporting from Pakistan's capital, Islamabad, said the attacks underscored yet again how fragile and dangerous the situation in the country is. No one has claimed responsibility for Monday night's attacks, and while the Taliban is often quick to claim responsibility for attacks on government targets, there is usually no claim for civilian targets. Yeah, I wonder why. The two near simultaneous blasts left dozens of cars and shops ablaze into the night. Many victims were women and children. Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know how to I don't know how to process that kind of information. Do you? Do you know how to do that? I really don't. I'm no great. I'm certainly not. Don't represent a standard of morality or ethical behavior. I don't. But this. How do we justify this? How do we keep doing this? It's just like Chris Hedges says, this is madness. It's just madness. And now we're going to increase it. We're going to send another 30,000. And you know that's just the beginning. You know that. You know where we're going to be a year from now. You know where we are going to be next Christmas. We're going to have another 400, 500, 600 dead Americans. We're going to have another, nobody knows the number of dead Pakistanis and Afghans. So many children being just butchered, just turned into chunks. How do we do this? How do we keep doing this? I'm mystified. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what any of this means. Do you? God damn. I cannot get my mind around this. In addition to another 500-700 Americans dead, soldiers, Marines, we're also going to have how many wounded? Pick a number, any number. How many are going to come back from this? Completely blown away mentally. You know, I watched some of the footage, and I realize it's coming over corporate-owned television in this country, but I watched the footage of these young American soldiers armed like, oh my God, like I've never seen before, getting ready to go out on patrol. And when they do take off their sunglasses, when you can see their faces, all I can think of is, son of a bitch, these are children. I don't care if they're 6'2". I don't care if they weigh 180 pounds. I don't care how well-trained they are. And the arrogance, and I understand you have to be arrogant to do what they have been conditioned to do, but the arrogance and waiting for them out in those hills are fighters who have done nothing in their society for 2,000 years but fight. And we're sending our people into that with this cockamamie idea that we're going to defeat these tribal people? Oh my God. Yeah, you know, I said a couple of weeks ago, I got the title wrong, but have you seen the movie The Beast? The Beast. It was about the end of the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. The Beast is a tank. And the tank commander and his crew of what? Two or three people inside that tank. And what happens? If you haven't seen the film, The Beast. Oh, God. But I just, I have such a problem with this, don't you? I mean, I know the solution is just don't think about it. Just don't think about it. But every time I see a report, and they're getting fewer and fewer and fewer on corporate media in this country, but they're coming in from the French news agency, the Guardian of London. They're coming in from Al Jazeera. They come in from the Times of India, from the Straits Times Indonesia or Singapore or whatever. It comes from the Australian press. It'll come from the Canadian press. You know, these stories about these massive bombings of eliminating people who are in a goddamn market. Children, women, men, you know, whatever. Doing nothing. Just civilians. And it stinks of Blackwater. It stinks of Eric Prince. It stinks of the CIA. And you know what? There's no way to avoid this. You and I pay for this. You and I are funding this. You and I support this. Nuremberg means nothing, does it? I mean, ask the average American about the Nuremberg trials. You're going to get a blank stare. You're just going to get, oh, no. I have no idea. What, man, what? You know, I don't know. I have no idea. Do you have the same kind of moral dilemma with this that I do? Do you? I mean, seriously. Even if you're a right-wing nutball, I mean, how do you justify blowing up children? Like the Pakistani man said, how much killing do you need? How much more? How much, you know, how much blood? third hour of the program tonight. The Malloy Show. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. Yeah, Jamie sent me an email. Reminds me, Michael Savage, or Michael Weiner, Michael Savage, wasn't he the one who advocating putting sticks of dynamite up the rear ends of Muslim children and blowing them up? Savage is a goddamn coward of the highest order. He's like any typical Nazi, American Nazi. He's a coward. But if Savage wants to do that, why not give him about 50 or 60 sticks of dynamite and give him a flak jacket and a helmet and drop his useless ass in downtown Peshawar and see how long he lasts before someone shoves 8-10 sticks of dynamite up his ass? Isn't that what he advocated? It was, wasn't it, huh? Or was it hand grenades? And Michael Reagan said something similar. How do people like this claim to be human who say those sorts of things, huh? How does that happen? Anybody know? I don't know. This is not an especially attractive program tonight, I understand. That story that's been making the rounds lately, I think it was in the Washington Post today, about the millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of military equipment we're leaving behind in Iraq, huh? Right? Passenger vehicles, generators, just equipment. The kind of equipment you need to kill people and blow things up. You know, war equipment. We're leaving tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. This is what the military-industrial complex loves! Goddamn, especially the weapons industry. Yeah! Imagine how much money they've made, huh? And now it's all going to be left in Iraq. Meantime, over in Afghanistan, on war two, they're desperate. Here we go again. Remember all the American soldiers that were blown up or brain damaged because the Pentagon had contracted with arms manufacturers to provide Humvees that were not adequate to the IEDs, the protecting troops from the IED. Remember all that? Huh? Remember the American soldiers who first went to Iraq and they weren't provided the proper body armor, blown to pieces, or their heads blown half off, or arms, legs, whatever. Remember all that, huh? And Kellogg, Brown, and Rood, and Halliburton, and all these other filthy contractors. We have 130,000 contractors still in Iraq, huh? Remember that? Remember all that? Here we are in Afghanistan. Tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of war-making equipment and material left in Iraq because, well, you know, it's a pain in the ass to send it home. Besides, we got so much of this stuff. God damn, we'll cut Social Security if necessary. We got to have this stuff. Oh, yes, we do. Under new authority granted by the Pentagon, U.S. commanders in Iraq may now donate to the Iraqis up to $30 million worth of equipment from each facility they leave. Do you know how many facilities we have? Was it about 250? What's 250 times 30 million? I don't even know. Officials involved say this approach has triggered arguments in the Pentagon over whether the effort to leave Iraqis adequately equipped is hurting the buildup in Afghanistan. Oh, man, man, oh, man, oh, man. One U.S. official who was involved in this process and spoke on the condition of anonymity said, how can a generator or an SUV or a relocatable building be excess if you are buying the very same thing and sending it to Afghanistan? In Iraq, people drive around in new Yukons, Suburbans, Envoys, and new pickups. In Kandahar, you find troops from the same U.S. Army driving around in broken-down 15-year-old right-hand drive clunkers with bald tires. War's a racket, isn't it? Huh? Oh, my God. So, while the Pentagon is trying to determine what to do with billions of dollars worth of equipment in Iraq...
Well, let's just leave it.
Our war makers in Afghanistan are completely vulnerable, and they will be blown away. They will be shot dead. They will be grievously wounded. They will be psychologically disordered. That will last all of their lives. And the answer, the question, of course, is why. Besides that, according to the New York Times today, there is no firm plan for U.S. exit from Afghanistan. As a matter of fact, here's the lead. The Obama administration sent a forceful public message yesterday, that American military forces could remain in Afghanistan for a long time, seeking to blunt the criticism that President Obama had sent the wrong signal in his war strategy speech last week by projecting July 2011 as the start of a withdrawal. I don't watch these shows, these news shows, so-called, these interview programs on Sundays anymore. I usually try to go outside and go bike riding with Kathy and Molly or go for a walk or you know. In a flurry of coordinated television interviews, Defense Secretary Robert M. Gates, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, and other top administration officials said that any troop pullout beginning in July 2011 would be slow. And that the Americans would only then be starting to transfer security responsibility to Afghan forces. General James Jones, President National Security Advisor, speaking on CNN's State of the Union, said, quote, we have strategic interests in South Asia that should not be measured in terms of finite times. We're going to be in the region for a long time, end quote. And Secretary of War Gates also played down the significance of that July 2011 target date. He said on CBS's Face the Nation, quote, there isn't a deadline. What we have is a specific date on which we will begin transferring responsibility for security district by district, province by province in Afghanistan to the Afghans, end quote. So there is no, don't kid yourself, also truth seekers, don't, you know, I mean, it's one thing to be naive, it's something else to, again, to be just dirt stupid. Don't be dirt stupid. And it's about time that you lost your naivete. I mean, really. Me too. Me too. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we're going to take some phone calls, if you like. The number again is 877-996-2556. No, I don't know what to do with all this stuff. Like I say, I wish I were brilliant like Newt Gingrich or Glenn Beck, then I'd know exactly what to do. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Every time you leave, go out someplace. Things gonna pieces in my face.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. All right, Brad is listening in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Brad. Hey, Brad. Where's Brad? Oh, Brad bailed out. Okay. Chris is in Alameda, California. Hey, Chris.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. We're going to have, let me put you on hold. We're going to have to get a different phone there. Can't do that. Maybe Kathy will pick it up and talk to you for a second. Let's try Warren in Revere, Mass. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Mike. You were saying earlier, you were talking about war being a racket.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's not time for everybody to wonder if our entire
system... I'm sorry, say it again.
I think it might be time for people to wonder if our entire system isn't a racket. And I was going to ask you if you were familiar with the term synarchism.
How are you spelling it?
S-Y-N-A-R-C-H-I-S-M.
No, I'm not.
All I have here is something that I just jotted down out of my, you know, my own general knowledge, but it's not like I, you know, on the internet or anything, but it's a system like, you ever watch TV wrestling?
No.
It's garbage, but have you ever had the misfortune of encountering it? You know how one guy's a bad guy, one guy's a good guy, and they seem to, you know, but they're probably, you know, having tea afterwards, you know.
Right.
You know, where it's a system where your Democrats and Republicans would be working together in a coordinated effort according to a corporatist agenda, but presenting to the public, you know, opposition mostly on, you know, social and moral issues as a distraction.
Right.
And it's just the more I see this president, who I voted for, go right down the line, act like the last bunch.
Mm-hmm.
I begin to get, you know, that cynical.
Yeah, I understand, Warren. I'm going to have to stop the phone call. You know, once again, here in the Malloy compound, we're having more sound problems. I don't know what the hell is going on. I do apologize, Warren. Thanks. Appreciate what you had to say. I don't know, Kathy. Are we going to take any more calls tonight?
I don't know.
I don't either. This is ridiculous. But apparently we've got a problem here in the mix. Let's try Chris in Alameda. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I hear you just fine. I don't know. Yeah. It seems like some of the calls we get just our system can't handle them. I don't know what it is. Anyway, hi, Chris.
Yeah, hey, I wanted to tell you to hang in there. We all need to be focused on making sure we, you know, insist that our elected officials wage peace. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've really focused on that lately. Like you say, we're killing children. And I've talked to people in my office, and it's like, you know, a lot of places they say, well, it's okay. They don't understand the gravity of the horror that we're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, with respect to Obama, they say he must be a nice guy, but a guy couldn't do this and have a good heart. He's got to have a dark heart.
So I hear you. Well, when you say people where you work say it's okay, you mean they're saying it's okay to kill children, or they just stick their fingers in their ears and go la 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 la? They don't want to hear it.
No, you know, I had discussion. I was really disappointed right after Obama was elected. We had some missile strikes. I think it was in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And we killed children. And I said, you know, I voted for this guy because I thought that was going to stop. You know, that was, like, really important to me. And other people say, well, that's where the terrorists are. And that seems to justify everything for them. I don't think you should kill children to get the terrorists. It's stupid.
You know, I wonder if the people that are saying this to you, if you responded by saying, but wait a second, the greatest terrorist organization in the history of the human race has been the CIA, and the U.S. Pentagon, U.S. foreign policy. I wonder what they would say, because that's the truth. I mean, that is so the truth, as it's almost stupid to say it's the truth. It's so the truth. You understand what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and what you're saying, too, is that we have a warmonger society, and it is so mainstream that people don't even realize how screwed up we are, you know, talking about the CIA and everybody else. I mean, we're doing terrible things. And it's like people don't get it.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, thanks, Chris. I appreciate what you had to say. Thank you. You know, as far as waging peace, who was it that it was the Kucinich campaign that Dennis Kucinich talked about having a department of peace. Remember that? Oh, and by the way, it was a couple of you have emailed me. Thank you. It was Michael Reagan who advocated stuffing grenades with the pins out up the rectums of Muslim children. Savage has his own horror and sickness and disease, but the bit about blowing up children, that was Michael Reagan's. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Defining Anger Management, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 26 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Pat is in Pecos, Texas. Hey, Pat.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Malloy?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I was wondering if you could help me out with something. As far as this war with the radical Islams, did we start that or did they start that?
We did.
We did. And mm-hmm. Where did that happen at?
You have to go back to about the 10th century when we sent hordes of Christian crusaders swarming across Europe. And by the way, on the way, they would kill Jews, too, because they weren't Christian either, all the way into the Middle East to attack the Muslims. What else you got?
Well, what I was trying to get to was, it seems like ever since man has been on Earth, this has been going on, correct?
Well, that's the problem with religion. It creates hatred.
Correct. Yeah. And that's what I don't understand. They call it jihad, which is a holy war, and I never knew there was anything holy about war. Okay.
Well, war is made holy when, well, for example, like when you invade Palestine and say God gave you the land, that's called a holy war if you happen to be Jewish.
Okay.
When you come to the United States from Northern Europe and start slaughtering indigenous people because you say God said that you're supposed to come here, those are called holy wars. What else you got?
Are we just supposed, in your opinion, are we just supposed to stop, pull completely out, and let them do whatever they want over there? Would that be
why not? Wait a second. Don't we do whatever the hell we want over here? Why shouldn't they be allowed to do whatever the hell they want over there? We're the ones that invade their countries. Don't forget what Osama bin Laden is alleged to have said, and that is he wanted U.S. military out of the holy sites of Islam, which was Saudi Arabia, where they have Mecca and Medina.
Right.
Can you just imagine if there was a Muslim army in downtown Bethlehem?
Well, I think a lot of people are missing the point.
I think you're missing the point, Pat.
No, I'm not saying I disagree with you. What I'm trying to say is that Saudi Arabia is the one that asked the United States to come in there and be a thorn in these people's side. They asked us to do that.
They asked us to do what? What people? Come in where?
The Saudi Arabian government asked the United States to come in there to be a thorn in the side to try to get rid of these people.
Wait, to come in where? To get rid of?
Into the Middle East.
What Middle East? What are you talking about? Name a country.
Iraq.
The Saudis asked us to come into Iraq. No, the Saudis didn't. The Saudis didn't. All right. Well, listen, I can't sit here and play these kind of word games with you. I don't think you have a very clear understanding of how we got where we got. The Kuwaitis. Kuwait, that little tip down there of, actually, it's a former province of Iraq, but it was broken off as a separate country sometime after, World War II? I'm not sure. But Kuwait is bull snot. There is no such thing as Kuwait. There's actually no such thing as Iraq. All these countries, my friend, were created by white Europeans at the end of World War I, at the end of World War II, prior to World War I, during the great imperialism of the Dutch and the British and the French, and then, of course, it was our turn in the 20th century. All these little places were created by us. They don't exist anywhere in history. So Kuwait was created. The Kuwaitis decide to do something called slant drilling. Because they're all oil crazed over there. So the Kuwaitis were actually stealing, what Iraq considered to be its oil. The ambassador from Iraq had a talk with April Glaspie, the ambassador from the United States, who was George Herbert Walker Bush's ambassador to Kuwait. Or was it, to Iraq and, or one of the countries? I don't know. It really doesn't matter. I'm not trying to educate you. I'm just shocked that you don't know this stuff. But April Glaspie said the U.S. has no position on disagreements between, Arab countries. In other words, a green light to Saddam to invade Kuwait, which he immediately did. And then Kuwait hired a PR firm in Washington, D.C. to come up with stuff like, they're throwing newborn babies in the street, which apparently didn't happen. They were just doing the standard warfare stuff, killing each other. So the United States decides to come to the rescue of Kuwait. Now, why were we there to rescue Kuwait? You figure that one out. The Saudis then suggested that they were scared. Here's big bad Saudi Arabia that we've been paying just trillions to because they happen to have they happen to live on top of our oil. So we've been paying trillions to them. Plus, we've been selling them massive amounts of weaponry that I don't know what the hell they use for. I guess all the cousins in the Saud family fly around to pretend like they're shooting Nazis or something. I don't know. The Saudis all left and went to Egypt to hang out at resorts while we whipped the Iraqis. But the Saudis didn't ask us to do a goddamn thing. Where do you get this? From Limbaugh? Probably. I don't know. The guy never did get around to his question, which was he was going to correct me. We don't have 200 facilities in Iraq. You're right. I went back and took a look at the Washington Post article from the Washington Post Foreign Service. We have 280 facilities in Iraq that allegedly are going to be reduced to 6 large bases and a few small ones by the end of next summer. So, I just can't get into discussions like that. It's crazy. Come on. The Saudis asked us to come over there. And who attacked whom first? See, that's the thing. Americans have no historical sense, none whatsoever. And people in other parts of the world have an historical sense that can go back centuries, millennia. It never stops. So where do you want to start the argument of, or the differing point of view as to whom attacked whom first? I don't know. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. Do you know where that line comes from? The shores of Tripoli? Do you know what the Treaty of Tripoli was all about? Gentle listener, if you don't, when you get home, do a Google. I don't know. But you need to not ask questions like that that are just pregnant with dumbassery. I mean, they really are. I know what you're trying to do, and I don't think you're trying to do it because you're seeking knowledge. I think you do it when you ask me a question like that. I think you're doing it to try to catch me. Guess what? You can't. You cannot. So rather than play head games with me, why not just educate yourself? Don't waste your time with a radio program. Good God. Educate yourself. If you want to know who started it between the Christians and the Muslims, go find out. I mean, what you're trying to justify is the murder of Muslim women and children. That's your subtext. That's what you're about. That's what your phone call's about. That's grisly, man. That's cold. That's sick. That's so Christian. You know, why do that? Seriously, why do that? Why call me with that kind of garbage? I'm not to guess the subtext of your phone call? You are so transparent, my friend. I mean, looking through you, I can see seven counties over. I can see all the way up into the North Georgia mountains, the real mountains. Don't do that, really. If you have a point to make, okay. But this Q&A crap, when I get people to call me and start with this crazy question stuff, like, come on, do you not think I understand that game? Do you think I'm just sitting here going, oh, as I pick a huge booger out of my nose? Do you think, oh, well, my God, that's somebody looking for some real facts. Please stop. Thank you. Brad is in Atlanta. There's Brad. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. If you had your choice, here comes another question. If you had your choice, since you're self-hating white and you're a hater of the dominant white culture over here in America, if you had your choice to be airdropped in Tel Aviv, Israel, or downtown Tehran, which one would you choose?
Slow down a little bit. Start again. First of all, you're saying I hate white culture. What? Did you say if I'm a self-hating white?
You are self-hating white.
What does that mean?
I'm looking at
what does that mean? Self-hating white. What is a self-hating white? No, I hate guys like you. I love myself. Get the hell off my phone. This freak called back in for that. Scram!
Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 10 before the hour. What did that guy want? The guy that... Huh?
He wanted to know, since you are a self-hating...
Self-hating white person.
Man,
yeah, right.
Would you prefer to be dropped, I don't know if he said naked or just white,
yeah,
in Tel Aviv or... I guess somewhere in
Chicago, or
I think he was going to say Fallujah.
Really?
I
don't understand questions. I'll tell you what I really would like, dude. If you're still listening, I would like my country to live up to its constitutional promise. Not the part about women can't vote and blacks are two thirds of a human. No. You know, the kind of promise. I'd like to see war declared by Congress. I would like to see us stop killing people. I know that is an alien idea to you, gentle caller. You seem to have no problem with it. Your question about where do I get dropped? What kind of nonsense is that? Is that all you got? Is that the best you got? Jesus Christ. Oh, well, enough. By the way, I haven't mentioned this for a long time. When you listen to this program, if you're listening online, and even if you're not, if you're listening via some form of radio, after this program goes off, there's a rebroadcast of Bob Kincaid's program, Head On Radio. And, I haven't mentioned that lately. I don't know why. Head On Radio, is it headonradio.com? Yeah, headonradio.com. You can listen anytime you want to, but it comes on zip right after this, courtesy of Ben Birch and White Rose Society. So he does his show early in the evening, I think 7 to 9, I believe, Eastern Time. And if you haven't listened to Head On Radio Network, is it headonradionetwork.com? I think that's what it is. If you haven't listened to Bob Kincaid and Head On Radio, you know, head on as in collision, you're missing something. Okay. This is an internet broadcasting show. It's global. And, this guy is, worth listening to. I'm telling you, stick around, right? Right after this train wreck ends. Self-hating white person. Really? I hate white culture? What the hell is white culture? I can't let this go. McDonald's? Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Family Guy.
The Gap? What the hell is white culture?
NASCAR.
NASCAR? Is that white culture? Oh, my God. I hate white culture. And that jerk was from Atlanta. I know these people. See, a lot of people say, well, why do you live down there? I know. But that's why I'm armed. Oh, well. Brian is in Manchester, New Hampshire. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Mike. I just wanted to echo that Bobby Kincaid at Head On Radio. He's a good Scottish-American lad there. And I want to say to you, Father Michael Dennis Malloy, with a name like that and with your youngest, your beloved wife there, Catherine, that's a good Catholic name, and your lovely daughter, Molly Malloy. And why don't you just, well, back to my regular accent, I didn't mean to butcher the brogues there, I'm sorry.
Why don't we just all...
Head off to Dublin, to Ireland, yeah, right now, Mike.
Yeah, really, just move back to Dublin. I know, it's crazy, isn't it, huh?
Yes,
all those, you ought to know my brother's and sister name, but all those Irish Catholic names, and we're not Catholic. Oh, well.
That's right. No, I understand. But I think what the caller, two callers ago, he was talking about with the, you know, he's back there again in history. Cheney, they're in the Gulf War I buildup in August, September 1991. He gave phony maps to the Saudi Arabian royal family of Iraqi troops massing on the Saudi border, and there was not a single Iraqi trooper there, according to the real satellite imagery.
I remember that. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
And also, I just wanted to, today being December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, that remains to me, I use it as a hyperbolic statement. Some of the Cold War causes were good, but America's last truly good war, to me, if any war can be good, was World War II. And if people can try to remember that, there's an interesting book called Pearl Harbor Ghost there. It tells a great story about the Japanese Americans who are living in Hawaii at the time. They formed most of the Home Guard, like the National Guard at that time, and the Americans coming from the continent just after Pearl Harbor, they saw all these Japanese and American uniforms, and they didn't know what to make of it. But it just that crucial time in our history, and I think, in a way, I think that the fascists and the Nazis, the corporatists, like Albert Speer, the corporatist economic leader for Hitler, in a way it seems like they've won in this post-September 11th world, but I'm not going to give them the final victory. This would be a longer war than World War II, but the liars about September 11th, in the long run, they're not going to win. They're the same people, I believe, maybe you agree with me too, that they're the same people, the same class that killed off Bobby Kennedy and JFK and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. and they're the same people that are, but they're not going to win in the end. They're not on the, they're on the opposite side of God. I'll just leave it at that. I'm a Christian in that sense of the word. I'm a fallen Catholic. We've spoken before about that, but I, in a way, I do want to. I pay your plane.
Hey, let me ask something, Brian. Do you ever drink coffee?
All the time. Too much. I'm a manic depressive and an ex-Marine on top of that.
Oh, my God!
That's a bad combination.
That's a trifecta.
My own real Irish Catholic ancestry leads into that, too, and that's another potent...
You are a swift talker, Brian.
I could be under the personality.
Listening to you, I have a feeling that you know, I'm on 45 RPMs and you're on 78. Now, a lot of people won't know what the hell I just said. You know what I just said.
I think people they love to hear your voice on radio. You could be if this was really a communication meritocracy. People like Bobby Kincaid and Mike Malloy, you would be on national radio
as
a multimillionaire easily. It's ridiculous.
It is that. Hey, Brian, thanks, man. All right, take care. Take care, Brian. Yeehaw! I like Brian. He's listening on our Boston affiliate, which is brand new, right, Kathy? Thanks for hanging out, y'all. This is your self-hating white man, Mike Malloy. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Individual results.